right. You guys got real chatty real quick. So who's having a great weekend? All right, that's good. That's a good sign. A lot of energy in the room. Anything amazing already happened today? We got one guy right there said, yeah. Everyone's, yeah, hands raised. Very cool. So here's the question I want you to answer in your brain. No, I don't need you to say it out loud. What's the best present you ever received? The present that made you go, wow, I actually got that? Just answer it in your head. I can't take answers at the moment. But you think what that is that you're like, that was an awesome present that I got. So when I was, I don't remember what age I was, but my grandma gave my sister and I a full-size air hockey table. Like, full-size. My parents were like, wow, hey, wait a minute. Where are you going to put that in our house? And so it ends up in one of our living space. It took up the whole room. All the fancy breakables were destroyed within 24 hours because with the puck just flying off everywhere. It was amazing. Like, we had an air hockey table in our house. Incredible. For like 2 days. Because, you know, how many hours per day do you actually want to play air hockey? Like, air hockey's fun when your friends are over, and so when we had birthday parties, it was awesome. Little gatherings at our house, it's amazing. But how often do you actually want to play air hockey, and how often do you have someone that you want to play air hockey with? It's not like my sister, who was 4 years older than me, was like, let's play air hockey 2 hours every single day. So just stayed in our living room, taking up space most of the time. Coolest wow-inducing present I ever received, just sat there. And eventually we moved houses. We had nowhere to put it, so it was just like sitting in storage. We donated it to the church. They used it, but then it started to break down. So the most wow-inducing present I ever received eventually was just a table in the youth room at my church. And then it wasn't even very good at being a table, so they threw it out. Best present I ever received. Like, I can't believe this. And then they got rid of it. And there's something about every single one of us that whatever we receive, it never satisfies us. It's never good enough long term. We get these things and we go, that was awesome, but then we need more. Or think about it this way. Think about if we kind of run through in our head where we go, if only I had blank, I'd be happy. And everyone had something a little bit different. If only I had a boyfriend. If only I had a girlfriend. If only I made the team. If only I got into Baylor. If only I got to Texas A&M. If only I won the lottery. If I won the lottery, I'd be set. Shh. I'm glad you're processing it out loud, but shh. Like, if only I had a MetaQuest 2. Well, wait a minute. There's now something better than a MetaQuest 2. And so maybe you got the MetaQuest 2 and you quickly realized, wait, now I need the new one. Wait, the 4's coming out? I got my first iPhone like 15 years ago. And it was incredible at the time. It was like the iPhone 4. Who's walking around still using an iPhone 4? No one, because there's like two of you in the room like, yeah, I've got my parents' 15-year-old phone. That's all they would give me. But it's the leftovers that you got. That's the reason you have one. No one's like, I'm so excited to get my first brand new iPhone 4 in the year 2025 because there's a better one now. There's an improved one now. Shh, you guys are being real chatty. There's always something new. And whatever we have that, just remember whatever that thing is where you think, if I had this, I'd finally be happy. We all have those things. And Solomon, who we're talking about this weekend, who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, he was able to run the great experiment. He's the king of Israel. He is rich. He is powerful. And essentially, he was able to test everything. And he could do the test of everything. If only I had, let me discover which one of these things will truly satisfy me. What will work? Every single if only, he tried it out. And says, Ecclesiastes 2, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that all, pause right there. Well, pleasure to test what is good. So the whole point of Ecclesiastes 2 is him testing everything. This morning, we talked about things that are under the sun, this side of the stage versus the eternal. Solomon ran a full test of everything under the sun. Everything he could do, because he was rich, he was powerful, he could do it all, he could achieve it all. He's going to run through all of it. If you live without God and you pursue pleasure in this world, this is his test. That's what we are about to look at. So he continues on, and we're going to do several different tests here. Test number one, the laughter test. Laughter is madness, and what pleasure does it accomplish? So he says, I'm going to try laughter. So who's your, shout it out real quick, everybody, your favorite comedian, favorite funny TikToker, favorite funny YouTuber? Yeah, I, yeah, I heard every single answer that you gave very clearly. It wasn't just a jumble of noise. But yeah, whoever it was, whoever your favorite is, he was able to hire that person. He invented a time machine, brought them from the year 2025. He's hired them. They live at his palace. And anytime he's like, I want to laugh, he would invite them in to make a new TikTok for him, new YouTube video, do a stand-up routine, write an episode of their TV show or whatever. And he had it. All the laughter in the world, whatever it was, he could just have it. Make his own movies. He could pay to have it made for him. Like, he had all of the ability to be entertained. And then he does another one in verse 8. It says, I acquired male and female singers. So he tries music. Music is amazing. Most everyone loves music. One of my nephews doesn't. I didn't know how to respond. He's like, I don't really like music. Like, what? Who doesn't like music? But almost everyone except my nephew loves music. So you make an awesome playlist on Spotify. And you've got just the incredible playlist. Solomon, he just hires Taylor Swift and the band to play at his parties. He's got Ariana Grande just on retainer. Whoever your favorite band is, they just live there whenever he wants a concert, invites all of his friends over, boom, right there. He's having an in-person concert. For me, I'm actually going to combine these first two together for what I'm going for. Got Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al fans in the room? Took my kids to go see Weird Al Yankovic in concert just a couple months back. He is 66 years old, and he is 60, not 67, not 6'7". Not yet. 66. One more year, and you can do that bit, which will already be over by then. He's still got the energy, he's still funny, he still can sing while putting on a fat suit and dancing on stage for 2 hours, even in his mid-60s. So at my little experiment, I'm going to have Weird Al making me laugh and making music for me. But Solomon, whatever music you love, whatever entertains you, he's got it. You might as well call these the entertainment test. So let's just, he's got every video game system. He's got the MetaQuest. I don't even know that side. The VR stuff, I don't know anything about it. My son plays Gorilla Tag, and it's like the craziest looking thing. He's like running around his room, swinging his arms around like, all right, I'm glad you're having fun, but I am so confused right now. Shh. But whatever it is, entertainment, he has tried it. He has bought it, all of it. He's done the test. Next one, verse 3, the party test. I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. So it says, I'm just going to party like no one else. We're going to go wild and crazy. And so all the finest wine, craziest parties, he is going for it. And continues on, achievement test. Verse 4. So we've done entertainment, we're partying, we are drunk out of our minds, and he goes, let's try and be successful. He says, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself, planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruits, trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves and flourishing trees. So maybe some of you are like, partying, I have no interest in that. And like, hey, music is fine, but that's not my obsession. But man, I want to make a name for myself. Like, whether grades, you want to be number one in your class, you want to get into that perfect college, it's sports, you want to be A-team, get the scholarship for college, you want to get an amazing job, it's about achievement. Maybe in social media world, you want the most followers. He ran that test. It's like, I'm the king, I've got money, I've got power, I'm going to go crazy, and I'm going to build the biggest everything. And he achieved incredible things. Continues onward. Ecclesiastes 2, 6, verse 7. There we go. I also owned many herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. Animal people in the room, anyone love dogs? He's got a zillion dogs. He's got a million horses, all of it. And like you said, he's got silver, he's got gold, he's got all the stuff in the world. So whatever that thing was where you said, if only I had, he had it. If your thing was a thing, he had the thing. He bought everything he wanted, he built everything he wanted, he had everything he could ever dream of. He accomplished everything he could possibly accomplish. One more on here. And I had a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. Now, harem is not a word that we often use. If you saw the new Superman movie this summer, the word harem actually kind of rotated back into, I had to explain what the word harem was to my children after watching a Superman movie. That was not on my, you know, bingo card for the year 2025 that the word harem would pop up in a Superman movie, but hey, what a time to be alive. He had a lot of women. We're actually going to come back around to this shortly. He was quite the Rizzler, totes Rizzler, Solomon was. Like, lot of women. And so Solomon has tried everything. Stuff, women, sex, accomplishments, all of it. Tried everything in this world, everything under the sun. That's what we're talking about. Under the sun, if you live without God and you pursue pleasure in this world, he tried all of it. Everything you would dream of, he tried it. And in verse 10, he's going to give us his conclusion. His conclusion, you can probably guess if you were paying attention this morning. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. He bought everything. He tried everything. I refused my heart no pleasure. He gave his heart to everything under the sun. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. Chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. All of those phrases, he uses them once again. All the tests, the stuff, the women, achievements. It was nothing. It's the hamster wheel. No matter how fast you go, how long you go, you're still right there. You've accomplished nothing. It's a vapor. It's your breath. It just disappears. Kid in the hall showed me. I don't even know what he was doing. He was like breathing into his hands. And then all of a sudden, his breath formed in front of me. I don't know how he did it, what was going on, if it was a magic trick or whatever. But this guy right over here, he made his breath appear in front of me. He was like, wow, that's what we were talking about this morning. And you saw his breath for a second, and then it was gone, and it disappeared. That's that disappearance of it, that's the way Solomon describes Solomon. Yeah, don't do it right now. Show everyone afterwards. Don't do it right now. Check him out after this. It's a cool trick. But that disappearance, just, it's gone. like that? That's what he described all of this stuff. Man, I achieved everything I wanted. And then I felt empty. Man, I had an amazing relationship. And then I needed more. I bought all the stuff. It was cool for the moment. And then I needed more. Nothing satisfied. And the crazy thing is, here we are 3,000 years later, and as a society, we're still repeating the exact same tests, expecting different results. You can go to a grocery store, wherever, where they sell magazines, and you can find any number of Men's Health, Cosmopolitan, Glamour, anything like this. We keep repeating the exact same tests. Like, what do they describe for the best life you can have? It's look good, it's get rich, your sex life, how to get abs. Like, just look, every single one of these magazines, it's the same exact tests that Solomon ran 3,000 years ago. Solomon tried everything and he said, it didn't work, it failed. I pursued everything under the sun, didn't work. Every month, you can just look these up, the same stuff. This one was one of my favorites. 759 ways to live the perfect life. You know, there's only 613 commands in the Old Testament. Men's Health has 759 commands for your perfect life now. And every single one of them, it's dating advice, it's career advice, it's how to get rich quick, how to get babes. Like, it's literally the same exact stuff. That's the way if you read the magazine, that's the way they talk about it. I'm not trying to be misogynistic. But, like, it's that stuff. Shh. And we keep running the same exact things. One definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. But here we are 3,000 years later, and every single one of us thinks, man, if only I won the lottery, if only I had a girlfriend, if only I got into the college, I'd be happy. And it hasn't worked for anyone as of yet, and we keep trying over and over and over again. I found my Game Boy, an original one. Yeah. Black and white. Uses batteries, can't plug it into the wall, no charge, like, not backlit. Shh. At the time, this was incredible. This was joy and happiness. But if you actually used it now, man, it's actually not so good. It's not nearly as great as you think it is, because there's so many better options now. There's always something cooler, something fancier. So, actually, can you hold that for me real quick? So, it's kind of like if you have a cup. We're going to fill our cup up. Like, you got into that college you wanted. Wow, I'm so happy. Woo. It's empty. Okay, wait a minute. I just got the MetaQuest 2. MetaQuest 3. Okay. And you have people that they win the lottery. Wow, it's amazing. Whew. Wait, it's not working. The cup it's not staying. There's a hole in the cup. It doesn't work. Whatever it is, relationships, achievements, you get a compliment. It feels so good. Wow, I got a cup. I got more followers. There we go. And then you're empty. Thank you, sir. Yeah, that's amazing. Why do I say that? All the things we think that will fill us and satisfy us always end up failing us. Read an article, I looked up a statistic. You want to put this article up here? 1/3 of lottery winners go bankrupt. 1/3 of lottery winners. people that they win millions of dollars, like everything, dream they ever had comes true. And within a few years, they're bankrupt and miserable. There's a hole in their cup, and they keep pouring and pouring and pouring till the pitcher is empty. They've run out of lottery money, and they're still trying to pour and pour and pour. And they're bankrupt after winning the lottery. You think it's unfathomable. Like, I mean, I'm sure someone does that, but not ever. Like, a third of lottery winners, a third, one in three, goes bankrupt. That is wild. And if you just kind of go through, you look at our society, and the average debt for an individual is $9,000 in credit card debt, because people keep spending in hopes of finding something that brings happiness. But it's not working. We're like the most entertained culture ever, but we're not any happier. We always need more. No matter how cool achievements, we always need more. Saw an interview with Tom.
Why do I have?
Real close. Almost there. Saw an interview with Tom Brady, and he summarizes this so well. He's a modern day Solomon, achieved so much. And his answer, Tom Brady, legendary quarterback, this is what he had to say after achieving everything.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I thank God. It's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27. And what else is there for me?
What's the answer?
I wish I knew.
That's Tom Brady. Like, I think more Super Bowl rings than anyone. Many people argue greatest quarterback of all time. Dated models worth millions and millions of dollars. Literally modern day Solomon of sorts. Whatever he wants, he can have it. And he has achieved every goal he has set out to accomplish. And at 27, he was on top of the world. He done it 27 years old. That's less than 10 years older than some of you. And he'd done it all. And he's being interviewed. Man, you did it. How do you feel? Empty. I just feel like there's got to be more than this. He literally even says in there, God, I feel like there's got to be more than this. It's like right there in the sentence, he's so close to the answer to what's going on. But he missed it. And we keep thinking we'll get different results. If I get my thing, I'll be happy. But all of human history, Solomon, in the 3,000 years since, have told us it doesn't work like that. And here's the problem. This pursuit of joy under the sun, living for this world, can have dire consequences. It can crush you. 1 Kings 11, it kind of gives us a summary of Solomon later in his life. This is Solomon, the person that this morning, that charge David gave to this exact person, Solomon. He said, serve God, know God, give God your whole heart. David, like hero of the Old Testament, you know, right there, like, you know, obviously Jesus, number one in the Bible. And then you got like David and Moses of like the heroes of the Bible, of the Mount Rushmore. David told Solomon, be wholehearted. And we find out how Solomon ended up living his life. He had 700 wives. Woo! And 300 concubines. Don't want to explain exactly what that means, but he's got 1,000 women in his life. Shh. And his wives turned his heart away. His heart turned away. His dad told him, live for the eternal, serve God, pursue him. Solomon did his little test, tried everything in the world, and it turned his heart. And then it says, his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. Solomon tried to do that middle chair this morning. We try and go do both. I love God, but I also love women. I'm also trying to have all the stuff. Solomon tried to do the middle thing, and it turned his heart from God. And it gets, if you understand the history of Israel, I wish I could dive into it, because Solomon's choices have consequences that kind of ring true to today. The nation of Israel was a great nation that served the world 3,000 years ago. But because Solomon wasn't fully committed to God, Israel, after him, splits in two. And it basically has turmoil for the 3,000 years since. Very briefly, Israel was a great nation under David. And then Solomon didn't follow in his father's footsteps. He didn't obey that charge. And he was half-hearted. He was divided. And eventually it split the nation because of it. And sin can have so many lingering consequences that we don't even realize. And so often the biggest pain in your life will come from the sin of another person. This morning I talked some about the struggles in my household with my dad. And my dad was a very successful, kind of charismatic, likable guy. Very successful at work. And very ambitious. And so he was actually like very high up at Dell in the 80s. My dad like knew Michael Dell of Dell Computers way back in the 80s. Like super successful, retired when he was 45 just because he wanted to. And when I asked him like, how are you, like 5 years after he retired, like, are you happy? He's like, I'm actually just really bored. His dream is to retire and play golf all the time. He got it. And he just was bored and lonely. He was married 3 different times. He couldn't control his own desires and urges for sex, relationships, so had an affair, cheated on my mom, which led to so much pain in my life with my parents getting divorced. But it led to so much pain and loneliness in his life. And then, as I mentioned, my dad died when I was 20 because he was an alcoholic. At some point in time, he was in high school, same age as some of you. Someone was like, want to drink? And that set him down a path that eventually literally killed him, where he was seeking joy, satisfaction, happiness in alcohol. And instead, it led him to just misery and loneliness. And eventually, you know, his children, my sister and I, or I have a brother too, we didn't have a dad anymore because he pursued satisfaction in a place that destroyed him. The reason we say all of this is that we don't want you to head in that direction. As we said this morning, there's a better way. And the book of Ecclesiastes, it's written, and it's like big, gigantic chunks of like, oh man, this is depressing. Oh man, this is dark. Also that when you get to those moments of light, it shines so bright because God has an answer. The whole point of this, the series of talks in Ecclesiastes is it, when you pursue happiness in this world, it's a cup with a hole in it. It won't stay full. It doesn't work. It's running in a hamster wheel. You don't get anywhere. It's vapor coming out of your mouth. It's gone. But we were meant for something else. It says in Ecclesiastes 3, he has made everything beautiful in its time. He also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done before the beginning to the end. We weren't made for this world. We were made to connect with the eternal. We were made to be satisfied by God. One illustration that people have used is this idea of a God-shaped hole. So almost every kid had something like this when you're growing up. I had to have my, Wow, that, he was really excited about it. I didn't realize these were, anyone else a huge fan of these still? Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you, yeah, awesome. So we bought this, and I couldn't figure out how it worked. I needed my 7-year-old, Karis, over there to explain to me how to get the toys out of it. That's how you know I'm getting old. I don't understand how the children's toys work. But you have these pieces, and they can only fit into the one correct spot. And you still have to find the right spot, and then, whoop, fits right in. Yeah, I did it. I figured it out. Yeah, finally. Thank you. Thank you. It's just, I feel validated. This, I feel I'm full, but now I need another compliment. But anyway, we're all made with a God-shaped hole. All the things in this world are not designed to fit. It's the wrong shape. My hands are too big. All achievement, it doesn't work. Relationships, it's not meant to fit in the space. It's a God-shaped hole. We were designed to connect with the eternal. We're designed for God. That's why we do everything that we do here, why there's small groups, Connect Weekend, Sunday mornings, to provide a way in environments for you to connect with the eternal. C.S. Lewis said this, "If I discover within myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." We were made by God for God, meant to turn to Him, not turn to all the things in this world that do not satisfy. Music, bands, relationships, they're fun. But that's not meant to be our purpose, our core, our satisfaction. It says in Psalm 16, "If you have made known to me the path of life, you will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your hand." We're meant to find satisfaction in God, not in this world. There is an answer. There is a path, and it's the eternal. It's God. It's not living for things under the sun. But the reality is, many of us have had times where we've been in that middle chair from this morning, where we love God, but we have other stuff too. And a lot of, as we talked about, when you head down those paths, you can get stuck in these sin traps where all of a sudden you have sins that are like addictions in your life, relationships maybe you shouldn't have, that become a sin trap that we kind of have to work and pull out of our body because we're like stuck, addicted to something under the sun and afraid of what might happen with it. It reminds me of a story back 20 years ago. Well, actually, a little bit more than that. But it's supposed to be a light story. It's actually a story about when my dad was dying. So it's actually not that light of a story. But when my dad was dying, my cousin lived with us to help take care of him. And after a while, she wanted to, like, see her boyfriend. She hadn't seen him for a couple months. And so we drove to meet halfway in Shreveport, which is a gambling town. So we meet up, and her boyfriend's like, "Well, I want to gamble while we're here." Because we were going to stay at, like, a motel or something like that. Brought her dog, too. It's pet-friendly. He's like, no, I want to go to a casino. So we leave the motel that's pet-friendly to go to the fancy hotel in Shreveport. You know the big rollers, skyscraper hotel, not pet-friendly. So we show up in the parking garage. We get out of the car, and they're like, "All right, Sean, here. I'm going to need you to take the dog, and I need you to put it in the bag, and I need you to carry it inside. Make sure the dog is quiet because we don't want to get in trouble." Like, what do you mean? Yeah. We got to sneak the dog in through the lobby. you want me to put a dog in a bag and walk through the lobby of a casino with armed guards? Or what? I don't think that's a good, yeah, let's do it. So we walk in, they put a dog in the bag, close it up, put it over my shoulder, and they're like, all right, I just need you to get to that elevator over there. We'll be at the desk, you just walk, go up to floor 3 real quick. So I walk in, whoa. See, that's what it was like. Just you're afraid the wrong step, and you don't know what's going to make a noise. So I'm walking with a dog in the bag, and every step, afraid I'm going to knock over a microphone, or at any moment, the dog could start barking. So I'm like, hey, nice and stay quiet, dog. Put my hand, pet the dog a little bit, carrying it around, awkwardly. Everyone's like, "Who? What is this weird guy? Why is he like shuffling with his feet, petting his bag, just waiting, any noise, and the security guards will come and get me." And I make it to the elevator, go upstairs, the dog in the bag did not start barking, and I wasn't tased by the casino security. Thank you. That's a life challenge that everyone should try it at some point in time. Try and carry a dog through a lobby with it in a bag. My dogs are like 100 pounds, so that way it wouldn't work anymore for me. Shh. Why do I sell that story? Some of you in this room have a dog in a bag. And I don't mean literally, but you've got like a sin issue. Something that's going on where you've been pursuing things in this world. You've been doing the Solomon test. Maybe relationships. Stuff going on with a boyfriend, girlfriend. Pornography on the internet. Like lying, cheating. You're at parties doing things you know you shouldn't be doing. And you're just constantly afraid that sin is going to start barking and you're going to get caught. Those things where you've been living under the sun, you've been half-hearted, leaning over here, having too much fun, and something's kind of crept in, and you've got the dog in the bag that you're afraid that you're going to get caught. Some of you are in that situation. And the reason I know that is because that is unfortunately too much of my own life. That I mentioned earlier, I used to be a youth pastor. And we mentioned before that Trey Dove, who spoke at your camp this past summer, was the person that replaced me. I wish that I could say that that happened under great circumstances, and it was nice, like casual passing of the baton to the next generation. Unfortunately, the answer is that that's not what happened, that I had my own sin issues, and that's why I had to resign from the church position I was at. So the church I was at, there was a lot of stress for a little while, and I'd kind of formed my own little coping mechanism, and it wasn't turning to God, and it wasn't turning to community. It was trying to solve things my own way by turning to alcohol. And so over time, it was like a little coping mechanism that if anyone saw it, they wouldn't think all that much of it. But I told you earlier, my dad was an alcoholic. So I kind of had alcoholic genes. And I decided to dabble in something under the sun to try and help smooth over some tension that I should have known better, that I shouldn't have been anywhere close to that because almost certainly I had my dad's same addictive tendencies. And so I was dabbling in it, and at some point in time, starting in December 2012, there was a series of teenage suicides in Hutto, Texas. And my coping mechanism was alcohol. And suddenly it wasn't a coping mechanism, it was just an addiction. And there was just a series of tragedies at our church. One of the students in my own discipleship group committed suicide. And I turned to alcohol, and eventually I was just an addict. And it was no longer I'm doing this to cope with what's happening. It was I can't stop doing this. I had my own dog in a bag. I had my own way. I kept turning to the things of this world to fix me instead of turning to God. And I was stuck in addiction for a while. And I was afraid if anyone found out what would happen, what would people think about me? Would I ever be able to preach again? Would I lose my job? How would I support my family? And so because I was afraid of the consequences of sin, if people found out what was going on, I couldn't come forward. And so I lived with secrets and sin and shame for years until finally I reached a point in time where things were starting to crumble. And I was like, no, it's time to come clean. And so at kind of the worst time possible, it was actually our church's equivalent of your impact camp. We call it boot camp. It was that week where essentially I was like, I just have to confess everything. And I went to the leaders of my church and I said, I've had this sin problem. I've been just drowning in alcohol as my coping mechanism, turning to everything under the sun to try and cope with the stress of everything instead of doing what I needed to do, even turning to you for help. I had no idea what was going to happen. No idea if that this is it, my ministry's over, I'll ever preach again, ever work with teenagers again. Like, I thought that was it. That was going to be the end. It says this in James 4. But God gives us more grace, is what the scripture says. God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. See, for years I tried to fix myself. That's living under the sun. I've got a plan. I can fix myself. And the idea that I'm afraid of the consequences of my sin, I'm afraid of what people will think of me, that's pride. Humility is, I can't do this. I know that God can. I need God to cure me, fix me. Not my plan, not the things of this world, but God. And so in summer 2016, I went, I'm going to surrender to the leaders of my church and ask for their help with my sin. And it was the hardest thing I ever did, and I had to resign from the church. And it was a very long healing process of making things right with my family. And it was awful at the time. But that's what happens. The further into the world of sin, the further you go down this direction. Remember this morning? The further you drive into Oklahoma, the longer it takes to get back this way. The further you go into sin, the harder it is to come back. But we serve a gracious God. Jesus died on the cross to forgive our sins, to redeem us. And wherever you've sinned, wherever you've fallen, wherever you're at, you can turn back. God opposes the proud, trying to fix yourself, trying to work through it on your own. He gives grace to the humble. And so if you've been running the tests, living for yourself, living for the world, God gives grace to the humble. And I challenge you, confess your sin to your small group leader, a friend, tonight. That's where God pours grace onto us. And it frees us to turn back to the eternal and give our hearts fully to God. It says in 2 Chronicles 6:16, the eyes of the Lord search the whole earth in order to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. If you're feeling weak, you're drowning in sin, but you want to turn, God is searching to strengthen you to do that. I want to tell one final story to close this out, and we're going to sing to our great God. But during my recovery process, I found out that my wife was pregnant with our daughter right over there with the headphones on in the back. And we're in this process of restoration. And my wife said, I think we should name her Charis. And if you don't know what Charis means, it's actually it's a Greek word for grace. And that's what we felt like, she was a symbol of grace in our life, that things got really, really bad for a while. There she is right there. That's a picture right there on the right is from last night eating dinner with Dave and his family. They like demanded, I don't even know what it was called. They demanded that we order this. And they showed up and my daughter's jaw just dropped. She was so excited to get it. But named her Grace because that's just what we felt. After everything that had happened, we just felt that God was pouring his grace so much onto us. I told you the reason I didn't come forward with my sin for so long, because I was afraid. Like, I'm a volunteer at the youth group that I used to work at currently. I spoke at the event where my life imploded 9 years ago this past summer. because God is a gracious God and a God of redemption. And whatever sin you're in, there is grace and hope on the other side. And our, like, we just kind of viewed Karis as that. And she used to do this deal where she'd run up our stairs and she would just like see me and she would just jump. Like, throw her arms up, and she'd jump at me, like, with no restraint. She'd just jump from, like, 3-4 stairs up, and I would catch her. It's so cute and adorable, until she tried to do it with the babysitter, who did not know the bit, and so she just jumped, and belly flopped on the ground, which is, I guess is not funny, but it's kind of funny at the same time. But why do I say this? Because she jumped towards me, just trusting that I'd catch her with open arms. Wherever you're at, if you've been living for this world, jump into the arms of your Heavenly Father tonight. As we're singing in your discussion groups, just turn to Him tonight. He's waiting with arms open wide, with love and grace. And that is the ultimate source of satisfaction. Let's pray. God, work in this room tonight that people that have been living for this world, they'd let go. They'd stop being half-hearted and they'd be fully committed to you with everything that they have, that they would pursue you and let go of all these failed tests, and they would know that you are their firm foundation, that they would come running home back to you. In your name we pray. Amen.
Hey, would you guys stand with me, please? We're going to sing the song, Run to